From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Distinguished delegates, ladies and gentlemen, it gives me great pleasure to declare open the 21st session of the Conference of the Parties to the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change.
That was the voice of Peru's Environmental Minister, Manuel Pulgar, the outgoing president of the 20th Conference of the Parties of the United Nations Climate Change Conference, at the opening of this year's conference, dubbed COP21, which began Monday in Paris and is expected to run until Friday, December 11th. World leaders are gathered with the aim of adopting a new international climate change agreement on the reduction of greenhouse gas emissions. This year's conference president, chosen by acclamation, is France's Foreign Minister, Laurent Fabius. Experts say cooperation between China and the U.S. is crucial if there's to be progress. The two countries have the largest economies in the world, but are also the two largest emitters of greenhouse gases. CCTV's Jessica Stone, reporting from Washington, has more.
The historic emissions reductions announcement in November 2014 ushered in a new era of Sino-American climate cooperation a year ahead of the Paris climate talks. The leaders of the world's two largest economies are also the leaders of the world's two largest producers of carbon emissions, and they're setting ambitious goals to reduce them.
I would say China is definitely one of the most important actors.
Wang Pu, a climate researcher at Harvard, says China's commitment fits into its economic goals of reducing reliance on coal-powered manufacturing and moving to a services and technology-led economy that pollutes less and emphasizes renewables.
Climate policy is viewed by the Chinese policymakers as both environmental policy and economic policy. I think it is a win-win solution for both the environment and for the economy.
And win-win for China's relationship with the United States. Wang says finding common ground with Americans on climate policy is also a way to manage diplomatic differences. For the United States, Chinese cooperation is essential to achieving a goal of President Barack Obama's slowing climate change, says Elliot Dieringer of the Center for Climate and Energy Solutions.
Unless both the U.S. and China are really committed to this, it's very hard to get other countries to come along. So I think the U.S. administration certainly recognized that and has worked really hard to reach out to China.
Many experts also believe nations around the world are watching to see if and how the U.S. reaches its reduction targets. The U.S. has already reduced vehicle emissions and is now focusing on cutting emissions from power production, the largest source of carbon pollution nationwide. Beijing doubts whether the U.S. political system will allow it to accept any binding climate agreement, and Washington has reason to doubt whether Beijing will accept emissions transparency standards or commit to set new reduction goals every 5 years. But both have moved closer on other aspects of the climate negotiations. During Chinese President Xi Jinping's U.S. state visit in September, China matched the U.S. contribution of nearly $3 billion U.S. dollars to help developing countries combat climate change. And perhaps its greatest impact, aside from reducing its own carbon footprint, will be to inspire other major economies to pledge ambitious reduction targets.
Heading into these talks, United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has said the current level of commitments by all of these countries, more than 150 of them, still does not yet achieve the goal that Paris has set of holding the increase in global temperatures to just 2 degrees Celsius. It will take a lot of work from both the United States and China to help change that. Jessica Stone, CCTV, Washington.
U.S. President Barack Obama was one of the heads of state to address the gathering. He spoke longer than the allotted time and faced interruption several times from the timekeeper's warning.
President Long, Mr. Secretary General, fellow leaders, we have come to Paris to show our resolve. We offer our condolences to the people of France for the barbaric attacks on this beautiful city. We stand united in solidarity, not only to deliver justice to the terrorist network responsible for those attacks, but to protect our people and uphold the enduring values that keep us strong and keep us free. And we salute the people of Paris for insisting this crucial conference go on. An act of defiance that proves nothing will deter us from building the future we want for our children. What greater rejection of those who would tear down our world than marshaling our best efforts to save it? Nearly 200 nations have assembled here this week. A declaration that for all the challenges we face, the growing threat of climate change could define the contours of this century more dramatically than any other. And what should give us hope that this is a turning point? That this is the moment we finally determined we would save our planet? Is the fact that our nations share a sense of urgency about this challenge and a growing realization that it is within our power to do something about it. Our understanding of the ways human beings disrupt the climate advances by the day. 14 of the 15 warmest years on record have occurred since the year 2000. And 2015 is on pace to be the warmest year of all. No nation, large or small, wealthy or poor, is immune to what this means. This summer, I saw the effects of climate change firsthand in our northernmost state, Alaska, where the sea is already swallowing villages and eroding shorelines, where permafrost thaws and the tundra burns, where glaciers are melting at a pace unprecedented in modern times. And it was a preview of one possible future, a glimpse of our children's fate if the climate keeps changing faster than our efforts to address it. Submerged countries, abandoned cities, fields that no longer grow, political disruptions that trigger new conflict, and even more floods of desperate peoples seeking the sanctuary of nations not their own. That future is not one of strong economies, nor is it one where fragile states can find their footing. That future is one that we have the power to change. Right here. Right now. But only if we rise to this moment. As one of America's governors has said, we are the first generation to feel the impact of climate change and the last generation that can do something about it. I've come here personally as the leader of the world's largest economy and the second largest emitter to say that the United States of America not only recognizes our role in creating this problem, we embrace our responsibility to do something about it. Over the last 7 years, we've made ambitious investments in clean energy and ambitious reductions in our carbon emissions. We've multiplied wind power threefold, solar power more than 20-fold, helping create parts of America where these clean power sources are finally cheaper than dirtier conventional power. We've invested in energy efficiency in every way imaginable. We've said no to infrastructure that would pull high-carbon fossil fuels from the ground. And we've said yes to the first ever set of national standards limiting the amount of carbon pollution our power plants can release into the sky. The advances we've made have helped drive our economic output to all-time highs and drive our carbon pollution to its lowest levels in nearly two decades.
But the good news is this is not an American trend alone. Last year, the global economy grew while global carbon emissions from burning fossil fuels stayed flat. And what this means can't be overstated. We have broken the old arguments for inaction. We've proved that strong economic growth and a safer environment no longer have to conflict with one another. They can work in concert with one another. And that should give us hope. One of the enemies that we'll be fighting at this conference is cynicism. The notion we can't do anything about climate change. Our progress should give us hope during these 2 weeks. Hope that is rooted in collective action. Earlier this month in Dubai, after years of delay, the world agreed to work together to cut the super pollutants known as HFCs. That's progress. Already, prior to Paris, more than 180 countries representing nearly 95% of global emissions have put forward their own climate targets. That is progress. For our part, America's on track to reach the emissions targets that I set 6 years ago in Copenhagen. We will reduce our carbon emissions in the range of 17% below 2005 levels by 2020. And that's why last year I set a new target. America will reduce our emissions 26 to 28% below 2005 levels within 10 years from now. So our task here in Paris is to turn these achievements into an enduring framework for human progress. Not a stopgap solution, but a long-term strategy that gives the world confidence in a low-carbon future. Here in Paris, let's secure an agreement that builds in ambition, where progress paves the way for regularly updated targets. Targets that are not set for each of us, but by each of us, taking into account the differences that each nation is facing. Here in Paris, let's agree to a strong system of transparency that gives each of us the confidence that all of us are meeting our commitments. And let's make sure that the countries who don't yet have the full capacity to report on their targets receive the support that they need. Here in Paris, let's reaffirm our commitment that resources will be there for countries willing to do their part to skip the dirty phase of development. And I recognize this will not be easy. It will take a commitment to innovation and the capital to continue driving down the cost of clean energy. And that's why this afternoon I'll join many of you to announce a historic joint effort to accelerate public and private clean energy innovation on a global scale. Here in Paris, let's also make sure that these resources flow to the countries that need help, preparing for the impact of climate change that we can no longer avoid. We know the truth that many nations have contributed little to climate change, but will be the first to feel its most destructive effects. For some, particularly island nations whose leaders I'll meet with tomorrow, climate change is a threat to their very existence. And that's why today, in concert with other nations, America confirms our strong and ongoing commitment to the Least Developed Countries Fund. And tomorrow we'll pledge new contributions to risk insurance initiatives that help vulnerable populations rebuild stronger after climate-related disasters. And finally, here in Paris, let's show businesses and investors that the global economy is on a firm path towards a low-carbon future. If we put the right rules and incentives in place, we'll unleash the creative power of our best scientists and engineers and entrepreneurs to deploy clean energy technologies and the new jobs and new opportunities that they create all around the world.
There are hundreds of billions of dollars ready to deploy to countries around the world if they get the signal that we mean business this time. Let's send that signal. That's what we seek in these next 2 weeks. Not simply an agreement to roll back the pollution we put into our skies, but an agreement that helps us lift people from poverty without condemning the next generation to a planet that's beyond its capacity to repair. Here in Paris, we can show the world what is possible when we come together, united in common effort and by a common purpose. And let there be no doubt, the next generation is watching what we do. Just over a week ago, I was in Malaysia, where I held a town hall with young people. And the first question I received was from a young Indonesian woman. And it wasn't about terrorism, it wasn't about the economy, it wasn't about human rights, it was about climate change. And she asked whether I was optimistic about what we can achieve here in Paris and what young people like her could do to help. I want our actions to show her that we're listening. I want our actions to be big enough to draw on the talents of all our people, men and women, rich and poor. I want to show her passionate, idealistic young generation that we care about their future. For I believe, in the words of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., that there is such a thing as being too late. And when it comes to climate change, that hour is almost upon us. But if we act here, if we act now, if we place our own short-term interests behind the air that our young people will breathe and the food that they will eat and the water that they will drink and the hopes and dreams that sustain their lives, then we won't be too late for them. And my fellow leaders, accepting this challenge will not reward us with moments of victory that are clear or quick. Our progress will be measured differently in the suffering that is averted and a planet that's preserved. And that's what's always made this so hard. Our generation may not even live to see the full realization of what we do here, but the knowledge that the next generation will be better off for what we do here. Can we imagine a more worthy reward than that? Passing that on to our children and our grandchildren, so that when they look back and they see what we did here in Paris, they can take pride in our achievement. Let that be the common purpose here in Paris, a world that is worthy of our children, a world that is marked not by conflict but by cooperation, and not by human suffering but by human progress, a world that's safer and more prosperous and more secure and more free than the one that we inherited. Let's get to work. Thank you very much.
China's President Xi Jinping also addressed the conference.
Mr. Ban Ki-moon, UN Secretary General, dear colleagues, ladies and gentlemen, today we are gathering here in Paris for the opening ceremony of the United Nations Conference on Climate Change. Our presence shows that terrorism cannot hold back mankind's efforts to address climate change and pursue a better future. Let me take this opportunity to express my sincere sympathy to the French people and my gratitude to President Hollande and the French government for their meticulous preparations for this conference. This Paris conference is convened to strengthen the implementation of the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change and bring about a comprehensive, balanced, ambitious, and binding agreement on climate change. The French writer Victor Hugo once observed that extreme resources spring from extreme resolutions. I believe that with all parties making joint efforts with sincerity and confidence, the Paris conference will yield satisfying results. Dear colleagues, ladies and gentlemen, the Paris Agreement should focus on strengthening post-2020 global actions on climate change. and boost global efforts to pursue sustainable development. The Paris Agreement should help meet the goals of the UNFCCC and chart the course for green development. The agreement should follow the principles and rules set out in the UNFCCC and contribute to its full and effective implementation. The agreement should put effective control on the increase of atmospheric concentration of greenhouse gases and encourage countries to pursue green, circular, and low-carbon development. The Paris Agreement should help galvanize global efforts and encourage broad participation. The agreement should provide institutional arrangements that propel countries to make concerted efforts. Besides governments, it should also mobilize businesses, non-governmental organizations, and all players in society to participate in international cooperation on climate change, thus raising public awareness of climate change. The Paris Agreement should help increase input of resources to ensure actions on climate change. Developed countries should honor their commitment of mobilizing $100 billion each year before 2020 and provide stronger financial support to developing countries afterwards. It is also important that climate-friendly technologies should be transferred to developing countries. The Paris Agreement should accommodate the national conditions of various countries and lay emphasis on practical results. It is imperative to respect differences among countries, especially developing countries, in domestic policies, capacity building, and economic structure. Addressing climate change should not deny the legitimate needs of developing countries to reduce poverty and improve their people's living standards. Dear colleagues, ladies and gentlemen, the Paris Conference is not the finishing line, but a new starting point. As an important part of global governance, the global efforts on climate change can be taken as a mirror for us to reflect on what models to have for future global governance and how to build a community of shared future for mankind. Much valuable inspiration may thus be drawn. We should create a future of win-win cooperation with each country making contribution to the best of its ability. The Paris Conference should reject the narrow-minded mentality of zero-sum game and call on all countries, the developed countries in particular, to assume more shared responsibilities for win-win outcomes. We should create a future of the rule of law, fairness, and justice. It is imperative to ensure effective observance and implementation of international rules, uphold democracy, equity, and justice, and build international rule of law. At the same time, the principle of common but differentiated responsibilities must continue to be adhered to. We should create a future of inclusiveness, mutual learning, and common development. Countries need to increase dialogue, exchange best practices, and achieve common development through mutual learning. At the same time, countries should be allowed to seek their own solutions that best suit their respective national conditions. Dear colleagues, ladies and gentlemen, China has been actively engaged in the global campaign on climate change. China now tops the world in terms of energy conservation and utilization of new and renewable energies. Going forward, ecological endeavors will feature prominently in China's 13th five-year plan. China will work hard to implement the vision of innovative, coordinated, green, open, and inclusive development. China will, on the basis of technological and institutional innovation, adopt new policy measures to improve industrial mix, build low-carbon energy system, develop green building and low-carbon transportation, and build a nationwide carbon emission trading market so as to foster a new pattern of modernization featuring harmony between man and nature. In its intended nationally determined contributions, China pledges to peak CO2 emissions by around 2030 and strive to achieve it as soon as possible. And by 2030, reduce CO2 emissions per unit of GDP by 60 to 65% over the 2005 level. Raise the share of non-fossil fuels in primary energy consumption to about 20% and increase forest stock by around 4.5 billion cubic meters over 2005. This requires strenuous efforts, but we have confidence and resolve to fulfill our commitments. The Chinese government earnestly implements its policy commitments of South-South cooperation regarding climate change. In a show of greater support, China announced the establishment of an RMB 20 billion South-South Climate Cooperation Fund in September. Next year, China will launch cooperation projects to set up 10 pilot low-carbon industrial parks and start 100 mitigation and adaptation projects in other developing countries and provide them with 1,000 training opportunities for tackling climate change. China will continue to advance international cooperation in such areas as clean energy, disaster prevention, reduction, ecological protection, climate, smart agriculture, and low-carbon and smart cities. China will also help other developing countries build up their financing capabilities. Dear colleagues, ladies and gentlemen, tackling climate change is a shared mission for mankind. All eyes are now on Paris. Let us join hands to contribute to the establishment of an equitable and effective global mechanism on climate change, work for global sustainable development at a higher level, and bring about new international relations featuring win-win cooperation. Thank you.
But while China and the U.S. face the difficulties of reducing carbon emissions, a British-based organization says the world's 48 poorest countries need nearly $1 trillion U.S. dollars in the next decade to achieve their plans to address the problem. Press TV's Waqar Rizvi has more.
The International Institute for Environment and Development says these nations require some $93 billion annually from 2020 to 2030 to reduce emissions and deal with more extreme weather and rising sea levels. A colossal amount of money is needed to help the poor countries to shift to renewables and cleaner public transport. This comes as over 100 world leaders will convene in Paris on Monday to open 2 weeks of intense negotiations aimed at signing a deal that could begin to avert the most devastating effects of global warming.
Meanwhile, across the world, protests have been taking place as climate activists attempt to push the world leaders to address the problem. CCTV's Kate Parkinson filed this report from Paris after Sunday's protest there.
Here in Paris, protests have been banned. A state of emergency was imposed in the wake of the Paris terror attacks, and police, citing security concerns, said the protests that were planned here in the French capital could not take place. Despite that, some climate activists did take to the streets today, and there were violent clashes, police firing tear gas. Protesters could be heard shouting shame on the Republic and accusing the French authorities, the French security services, of using the state of emergency as an excuse to clamp down and silence climate activists. Kate Parkinson, CCTV Paris.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.